Hello. Welcome to the Roll Together podcast. Thank you for joining us for these podcast versions of our streamed shows from Twitch. You can always find our schedule of upcoming shows at twitch.tv/RollTogetherRPG/schedule. Please do leave a review, and we look forward to adventuring together.
Welcome to Talk Together. Thank you for joining us for an evening of talking about the Dungeons and the Dragons and TTRPGs in general. I'm Nat, I'll be your host for tonight, and I'm going to be chatting to the wonderful Hannah. Hello, Hannah. Welcome, Hannah.
Hello. Hello.
Hannah, here on my right-hand side, I will be asking Hannah... Oh, yes, yep. Show the children. I will be asking Hannah questions about her experiences playing Dungeons & Dragons and other TTRPGs. And what questions you ask? Well, we are going to roll the dice and let fate decide. This is a D20. We have 20 questions, but we don't have 20 questions because, Hannah, you've been with us before, so we've asked you some of those questions already.
Yes, absolutely.
So hopefully my dice is going to flawlessly roll all of the questions we've not asked you.
Fingers crossed.
We'll see. We'll see. Before we properly kick off, this stream will run for about an hour. And we're delighted to be sponsored by Hero Forge, Ultra Pro, and Elderwood Academy. I've seen them all there. And supported by D&D Beyond, Warriors of Waterdeep, and Level Up Dice. Thank you very much, sponsors and supporters. If you're looking to find us outside of this Twitch stream, you can find us on Roll Together RPG across all of the social media platforms. I say all, not TikTok. But you can find us across many of them, most of them, including Patreon. And a big thank you to our D20 Club on Patreon who support us. So thank you very much to them. Our shows are available as podcasts. You can just search for Roll Together RPG on your favourite podcasting app. And if you can't find us, let us know and we'll sort it out and hook you up. Cool. So that's all the important bits. So hello, Hannah. How are you today?
I'm good. I've got my cup of tea. I've got my D&D answering questions hat on. I'm ready to get going.
This hat is invisible. Is that something we need to be concerned about?
Yeah.
A physical hat. Do we need to put hats on?
We don't have to put hats on. I subscribe to the Terry Pratchett School of Invisible Hats, okay. Where the sky is your hat.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's a big hat.
It's a huge hat, but hey, it's always stylish.
Well, exactly. And filled with limitless possibilities.
Oh, beautiful.
So regular Roll Together watchers will recognise you as the terribly posh Eladrin Protea from Into the Wastelands, the Eternal Army. So that's currently running in our Monday slot. But to catch everyone else up, maybe I know that you've done an interview on Talk Together before, but maybe people haven't seen that. Maybe people, this is their very first time coming to our channel. So could you please remind us a little bit of who you are, what you do, and maybe run through some of the other characters you've played in the streams before?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, who I am is Hannah. What I do is I am a games writer and designer and voice actor and poet. Basically, if it's got words in and people are playing, I've probably done something related to it. Nice. And I am a queer Jewish nerd, I guess. And I love playing characters that are very committed to what they want. And previous characters that I've played with Roll Together include Varya, who is big Loxodon barbarian, wants to just don't touch her mug, you know? Like that kind of thing. And I've played myriad other characters with Roll Together, but Varya and Protea are the longest running two at the minute.
I love Varya. I mean, Protea is awesome. We're still kind of getting to know her, whereas Varya, we've seen her in two different groups, two different scenarios.
Yeah.
I realised the other day that I Not intentionally, and it's not copying Varya, but I speak to my cat in Varya's voice.
Oh, well, that's a really good thing. I think Varya would be kind to cats, so that's
a... I would like to think so. This is a big Loxodon just being like, well, look at it.
Look at it. So cute, the kid. Yeah.
Amazing.
So, great fun.
Okay, so Varya is very, very committed to... she loves the violence.
She does.
She just likes to hit things. So with Protea, what is her commitment for you?
Running the fuck away. Yeah, being an actor, I always like coming at characters with like a strong I want to just... guide me through long form improv, which is D&D. And Protea wants to be well regarded and famous for doing very little. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really fun to play a bit of a coward. So yeah, that's her deal. A very young Fae Eladrin, who's kind of out on, as Varya was like a seasoned veteran, Protea is on her big adventure, first big adventure. If Varya is this like straight talking, what you see is what you get, Protea is maybe less straight talking, and what you see is a lot of pretty stuff to distract from quite a intense fear and need to be liked and safe. So very different as a vibe.
I know a lot of people in real life that do the, if I just make everything pretty and everything nice, then I don't have to think about the dark things. It's a very real, relatable, even though we're in this mad fantastical world and there's magic and mysticism, but that's some very, very like too real character choices.
Hey, real emotion, surreal action. You know?
That's what we love. That's what we love. I love as well the idea that you frame it as an I want. It immediately made me think, oh, and it might just be me being a Disney nerd, but obviously there's all like, every Disney protagonist tends to have an I want song.
Yeah. The moment of there's so much more to me. And it's just Protea being like, there's so much more to me. No. Not really.
If Protea was a Disney princess, or prince, or leading character, which one do you reckon? This is not on the approved list of questions, I apologise.
This is rough, because I don't think we get a really selfish Disney princess. We don't, well, all Disney princesses are a little bit Tory, but I guess maybe Anna from Frozen, in the sense that the younger one, the one who thinks they know how the world is run, throws himself at stupid nonsense and ends up causing a lot more problems for the people around her. And I want to be at a big party, I think. So, and then dealing with the consequences of that wanting to be in a big party. So yeah, probably Anna from Frozen. Though maybe now Elsa from Frozen.
Oh, yes. Yes, because we have had a big transformation. Yeah. Was this... So can you talk us through what happened for those who have not had a chance to see episode 5?
Yes. So...
I guess.
Niall, my illustrious DM, and I love playing with Niall. Like, it's a gift to get to do session zeros with him. Because... I'm very loosey-goosey. I come in with like a strong character, a voice, an attitude, a vibe. But I'm not one of those people who like goes away and writes tons of lore, because I feel like it's more fun for it to emerge naturally by yes-handing somebody else's offer. I think it's a lot funnier. And Niall went, Can I give you two siblings? I went, yeah, of course. No. Can I give you one of them, the middle one, who's a summer Eladrin, who's an amazing adventurer? Absolutely. And then he popped up at the first bit. Can I give you a winter Fae Eladrin, who's your older sister, and you haven't seen her? for years, like 20 years. Yeah, sure, Niall, not a problem. Let's do that. And it emerged over like playtime that Protea had been like sending letters constantly to this older sister and like looking out for her and missing her desperately. And the family had really been trying to track this sister down and what's happened? Where is she? We want her to come home. And then we find her in this middle of this sort of big gobbo camp and it's like, why the fuck are you here?
Yeah.
And the sister goes, our parents sent me away. And I thought, I mean, there's no point me trying to track you guys down. Which, Niall, beautiful yeah. thing to be given to Arfi. But yeah, so Protea snapped. All that she'd wow. know is a lie. And she is now in winter instead of being in spring.
Amazing. Yeah. Oh, drama. I'm not familiar with Eladrin as a subset of elf, so this is a new one on me. When you said that you were playing an Eladrin, I'm still in that place where, like, if I hear something in D&D that I don't know, I'm like, D&D Beyond, look it up, tell me. I must learn. So obviously I'd seen that you can have different seasons is the word I was looking for with Eladrin, but I didn't know how it works in terms of, like, mechanically. Do you yeah. now is it like a different sub race? Do you have different abilities and things going on now?
Yeah, so different abilities. They actually, it's funny. D&D tends to be very open about what kind of character you get to play with each race, mm-hmm. which is good. Because otherwise we'd get in some dodgy territory.
Absolutely.
But the Eladrin, it's a lot more prescriptive, which I was kind of excited about, having played everything from sorcerers to barbarians to druids to, you know. And I thought, and in spring, which Protea was in, you're excitable, you're happy, new life, new friends. And you and the mechanics of that character are about running away. You have a Misty Step that's free. And not only do you have a Misty Step that's free, you also have like a transportation spell where you can swap places with somebody else. It's all about zipping about and moving about the map. Whereas summer, it's a lot more, it's hot, it's fiery, you're up close doing combat. Autumn, I can't remember. Autumn is about like charm person related skills, which is fascinating.
Mm.
And winter is, you have to play your character like they are frozen, like they are incredibly sad.
Oh no.
And the winter characters are about crowd control and putting themselves in situations where people around them freeze as well, which is very interesting as a like vibe. Also, you get a cool new look. Your body changes as a Fae Eladrin. So
does this mean, and to my shame, I've not had a chance to watch episode 5 fully yet. Does this mean we're getting a new Hero Forge mini for Protea?
I mean, I'll make one, but I haven't had the opportunity to do that
right,
yet.
Okay.
So yeah, maybe when we return to Super Atea, we might have a new Hero Forge mini.
Exciting. Oh, well, I look forward to that. All right, well, we are over 10 minutes in and I've not rolled a dice yet, which...
Roll that dice.
We're in the TTRPG community. How can we cope without rolling a dice? Let's do it. Oh, straight away. I mean, I was going to say beforehand that my D20s have not been very kind to me lately. Oh. Not that it matters in this scenario because nothing can go terribly wrong. However, I have just immediately rolled a natural one.
Huge.
So that means I ask you, what is your most epic character moment?
Okay. Dang.
It's a big one.
It is a big one. For Protea or just in general?
In general, it doesn't have to be about Protea. It could be any. It doesn't even have to be about a character that you've played on stream. If it's a character you've played before in a home game or in a different TTRPG,
yeah,
tell us about that.
Yeah, I think my most epic character moment, I think, was the end of one of the first campaigns I ever played in. I was playing a Goliath barbarian, another big hitty lad, who was called Brock Fieri.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. And Brock had decided, like, about two-thirds of the way through the campaign, also because I was getting bored, that he wanted to open a wings, like a falafel cart, but for wings. And it was... We'd come across the deck of many things at this posh wanker's mansion. And he won in single combat the entire deck.
Wow.
And in exchange for getting the deck back, the person went, the Duke or whatever, went, "I will give you your heart's desire." And he said, "Oh, how do you know what my heart's desire is?" And turns out the Duke was also a god. And the Duke went, "You want that wing cart, don't you?" And Brock went, "There's a wish somewhere in this deck. I'm going to make my own wing cart, thanks." And just walked away from the deal. And that was like a big character moment, very cool. So yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I guess just for context, for those who've not come across a deck of many things before, just we get quite how big a MacGuffin it is. Could you describe it?
It's a huge MacGuffin. It's the MacGuffin to end all MacGuffins, which is amazing for Dungeons and Dragons. Basically, the deck of many things is when I encountered it, it was a physical deck of cards. And on each card is an effect. And sometimes that effect is like, you're lucky for the rest of the day, and it's a bit awful. And sometimes it's you change alignments. Or sometimes it's you no longer need to heal. Or sometimes it's you are cursed.
Mm-hmm.
The deck of many things is, I did not make my way through it, so I don't know, but it can really help you or really fuck you over.
You didn't make your way through it, but did you get your wing cart?
I did get my wing cart.
Okay,
in the end.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, we cleared out a dungeon. The dungeon had a carpenter in it. I apprenticed to the carpenter, learned how to make a cart. I was already good at the wings.
Right, okay. So you didn't even use the deck of many things. You practically
manifested it. I ended up bypassing it and using the deck of many things to really mess up our enemies, because it's difficult to resist the deck of many things.
Mm-hmm. It falls into the same category as like the Wand of Wonder and any of the wild magic things, where it's just, oh, anything could happen, so it's so tantalizing, even though terrible things could also happen.
Well, like, it's the same curiosity that I think drives a lot of people to make weird deals and decisions. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, but the bad stuff's not going to happen to me, right? The probability of the bad stuff happening isn't, it's not going to be me.
Yeah.
So,
As someone who's designed games as well, have you ever been tempted to put something, an element like that, into a game that you've designed and worked on?
I've been tempted. I make more traditional linear narrative games. I have made TTRPGs, but the games I like making and the games I like playing are not necessarily the same, which is good, because otherwise I would get very burnt out on those games. I really love making like cozy, cooperative scene setting world building games, or games where you totally stab Caesar and everybody's speaking like a valley girl, you know, that sort of thing, or games where I work with a company called the Tensei, which does like gamified training, where, you know, there's stuff along the lines of how do we help Syrian refugees use gamification to help address complex PTSD. So like the deck of many things doesn't quite fit, but I love those sorts of mechanics and I really like it. I play Gloomhaven every week with a bunch of mates, and any time there is a city event where you can talk to the shady man in the corner or you can walk away, we always talk to the shady person in the corner. So yeah
no, that's fair enough. Cool. I'm gonna roll that dice again.
Let's see what comes up.
Oh, from one end to the other. Not a nat 20 though. Oh. I'm not that lucky. This is 19. So okay. still pretty high, pretty high.
Still pretty good.
Ah, this is an interesting one. If you could go back and change an in-game decision, what would it be?
Dang. Can I tell you something really pretentious?
Yeah.
I don't believe in going back and changing decisions. Like, especially because it is... To me, I don't go in with like, this is where I want my story to like go, or these are the beats I want to hit. I have this is something my character needs to learn. And this is an obstacle that they can encounter. And I tend to discuss that with the DM, but the specifics of individual decisions. And I kind of feel like that about life as well. Like, you can't. So spending time thinking about what you would have changed or would have done differently is not the most healthy or productive. And I know that other people are like, no, but you know, it's interesting to think about the inflection points of your life. But I like where I've ended up.
And yeah, that's fair.
Who knows what the actual moment of change would have been, or the best place to change a decision to set your character on a different path. Who knows what that would actually have been?
Yeah. I feel pretty similarly to you, actually. I mean, it's happened before a couple of times on stream. I love a tiny, tiny retcon tweak, but it's usually my director's eye thinking 10 minutes later, oh, you know what? That moment was great, but just to cover the details to make it make sense, if we did it that way, that just makes a tiny bit more sense going forwards, but it's the same. It doesn't change fundamentally what happened. But in terms of big things, like if I think, oh, I really wish my character had said this in the moment, then I'm like, well, you can wish all you like, but they didn't. And that's part of who they were, is they didn't think to say that. And it wouldn't be truthful to go back and change that, because in those situations, in that moment, that is what they said. And if they have regrets about that afterwards,
that's great.
They can have another conversation.
That's brilliant. Like, I think there is a tendency in a home game, retcon all you like, but we have a recording to do and 4 hours in which to do it. And and then I want to go to bed. So it's like, no, the discipline of doing D&D for an audience is different to the discipline for doing D&D at home for yourself.
And very much so.
I think that those sorts of, oh, if only I'd, don't really have a place in a production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you, to flip the question slightly.
Oh, fuck, sorry. Oh. Right. Myself with my cup of tea.
Oh, no. That's the worst, when your tea is aggressive.
It is, right?
So to flip the question slightly, swipely? To swipe the question swiftly. To flip the question.
Yes.
So the version of this question that I do have answers for is not in character. I wouldn't change in character stuff. I would, maybe looking back at some of when I was a newer player, I would maybe look at my response to things and be like, now as a more experienced player, I wouldn't be as upset at things going down. Not that I've ever like rage quit or got stroppy or anything like that, no. But as a player, sometimes things happen and you go, oh, you get frustrated about it. But yeah, I think looking back as a player, there's probably moments that I would have a word with myself and be like, it's going to be okay. Mm. That's fine. Rather than getting upset about it. Are there any sort of real life that Hannah playing the game moments, looking back on yourself when you were a new player, where you think, actually, I would change that decision because that wasn't truthful to the character?
I feel a lot of empathy for new Hannah and new D&D player Hannah, and I don't think without those like awkward moments I would be as good of a player. And also, I was really lucky as a new player. I had done years of improv. I had been the straight man to funny people for a very long time, so I was very used to being like, "Oh, I didn't get to do something," but that's like something that's like ingrained into my practice, I suppose, as a creative. Like, I don't mind not getting to do the cool thing, so long as I set up the cool thing for somebody else. And I also, for my first ever game of D&D, went straight into Roll Together's previous incarnation, Adventurers Wanted. Mm-hmm. So I was immediately playing with a bunch of shit hot D&D players and improvisers who were right there ready to pick up whatever slack was present. So it was actually, I've been very lucky with the people I've played with and the games I've played. And I also just, it is a game. It is a game. I don't get sad or get frustrated in a game, luckily.
No, that's fair
enough.
It
drives my flatmates insane because they get so invested. We played Pandemic Legacy and they're like, oh, no, Mumbai has fallen. And I'm like, oh, well.
Yeah. Are you the one that doesn't feel any remorse when the game tells you to tear up cards?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's such a stressful moment when it says like, tear up this card and you're like, oh no.
I'm not a complete monster when they were like, nuke this city. I was like, we're not doing that though. Okay. We're just not doing that. We'll find a way around it. I refuse. That's irrevocable. But like, yeah. It's a good game.
It is such a good game. Can recommend. Absolutely. But it's, I guess it's one of those things that for some people it might be, given the last year, it's a little bit like
on the nose. Yeah,
it's quite on the nose. Yes. But also finding a group of four people that you can regularly enough meet up with to continue the same story. I mean, hello D&D scheduling.
Yes.
But it can get tricky nowadays.
It can, and luckily I live with two other people.
Great.
So we have an inbuilt like commitment, but it can be rough. I recommend Tabletop Simulator. Mm-hmm. For people who are far away and don't or can't meet up in person to game. I also think that like we did sort of go, do we want to play Pandemic? Mm-hmm. We're still in one. And you've got ghost spoilers. You have ghost zombies in Pandemic Legacy. It does not feel quite the same. Yeah. So it was really good fun. And we did not feel heavy about it.
So. Yeah. Have you, I'm going rogue and talking
rogue.
About, I'm going to talk
it.
About board games and not TTRPGs.
Hey.
Sorry, what were we going to say?
No, I was just going to be like, it's fine.
Let's do this. Have you played Betrayal at the House on the Hill Legacy as well?
Not yet. So okay. It's spooky season.
Yes.
And I'm a complete wuss. I actually have always been very bad at anything horror. or even suspense. Like I can't do blood and I can't do gore. So if you see any roll together games with me in them, you'll notice that the descriptions of blood and guts and eyeballs and stuff is very kindly aligned and avoided, because I genuinely feel physically sick. Okay. So I can't play horror games, though I know that Betrayal at the House on the Hill is supposed to be amazing. But then I just have nightmares for like weeks.
Yeah, okay, maybe don't play it. Stick with Pandemic.
We're playing Gloomhaven, which is great. Mm-hmm. Which is so big and
I've not had a chance to play it, but it looks epic.
Yeah. If you're getting into it, don't get the base game. They have a smaller one. Mm-hmm. That is very, very, very good as a starting point, and use the app. Because holy guacamole, there's a lot to keep track of. I thought, like, I play Crusader Kings 3. I can keep track of all sorts of information.
Too many resources.
So many resources. We're investing in, like, Tupperware with separate dividers.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing. Yeah.
I am one of the board game players that I really, like, I do enjoy resource management games, but I really have to be in the mood. And it's just one of those things where my husband is just practically better at it than I am. And not in a, like, oh, he's just played more. It's just his brain works in that way and mine doesn't. Mine
one of
works
my flatmates is just
smash.
So good, can count cards. I'm like,
yeah.
Look, I'm gay. I can't do maths. Don't do this to me.
Is that a direct correlation? I didn't realise that was...
So far. I'm sure there are outliers. But no, it's really funny. He'll go, well, obviously you're going to play this card next. But because I'm an idiot, I don't always do the expected thing, which still makes the game still fun, because otherwise it's not like he's playing against an AI. We're not always making the perfect choice.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's my poker technique, is I have no technique. And most of the time I don't know what I'm doing. But I tend to be, somehow, I do quite well, because people assume, because I'm an actress, that I will be hard to read. So they try and second guess themselves, when really I have a terrible poker face. But I cover that by not knowing what I'm doing. So I'm just like, yeah, all in.
Yeah.
And then people don't know what to do.
When one has very expressive eyebrows, bluffing games become a lot harder.
I feel seen. Right. Should we roll the dice and get back to TTRPGs?
Yes, please. Roll that dice.
Roll the dice. Oh, that was a 19 again. No. Ooh. I mean, good roll. Thank
good
you,
roll.
Dice. 4. Ooh. Oh, I love this question. This is a classic dinner party conversation question. Who would you love to have at your gaming table? And I suppose it doesn't have to be D&D table.
It could
be
anything. I want Sue Perkins. Because, oh my gosh, her mind, amazing. Mm-hmm. Also, I think she's very cool and beautiful. So I'll take a Sue Perkins, please.
Yes. With a side of...
Or the side of, can I have one order of the Sue Perkins? Mm-hmm. And then, a side for Sue Perkins.
This is a very different question.
It's a very different question, isn't it? I think, I don't know. Like, somebody who'd be really committed to the bit. I reckon we should bring The Rock along.
Nice. Yeah.
I don't know if he'd be any good, but he'd certainly be lots of fun. And it's just a one shot, I assume. So,
sure.
You know.
In this is your fantasy gaming table, so it can be whatever kind of game you like.
Who else do I really want at my table? These people I kind of want to meet. Can I have a David Suchet?
Sure. Yes. Yep. The Rock, Sue Perkins, David Suchet. And now, is David Suchet the red wine or the bread, or if Sue Perkins is the main?
Is the main course, I think David Suchet has to be like the red wine or like the port, you know, like fortified. The Rock, I think, is bread. He's just, there's so much of it. And you're always happy when it's there.
Yes.
But it's not necessary to a really good meal. And then I'll have one more person, I think, because then it's a fun five.
Yeah.
Who do I want at my gaming table? Nah, why? I reckon...
Would it be easier if you thought in terms of a meal? Who would be the dessert?
Mary Berry.
Oh, there you go.
Actually, can I bring along a Zendaya?
Sure. Yeah. She can get a starter.
Yes. I love this table. This beautiful this table of beautiful, clever
what
people.
What a meal.
Yeah. Oh man.
And
can you imagine Zendaya and Mary Berry? Like, I wonder who they would play.
Like, I love this. And I can fully imagine Sue Perkins just sat there right next to you, just being like, I think Sue Perkins would want to see this combo as well.
I hope so. I hope I've made Sue Perkins happy, you know?
Well, I'm sure she watches. So
yeah.
Get
Hi.
In touch, Sue.
Lovely to... nice to have you along.
So in this D&D meal scenario, who is the DM? Who is the chef? Is it you?
No, I absolutely do not want to be DMing at this table. I would be so distracted. Do you know what? Sue, she writes and she does like comedy and improv and silly voices and stuff. I think she'd be able to keep track of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we know that she's played D&D before.
Well, exactly.
So she has, I feel like out of all of those people, I don't know, maybe Zendaya has.
I reckon The Rock might have, you
maybe.
Know?
Maybe.
Yeah. I think that's like on the level of nerd shit he'd do. I think.
Yeah.
I don't think Mary Berry has played. So that's okay. Yeah. We could give her a pre-gen.
Yeah. You might have to explain the concept of the game and why the dice have more sides than six.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay, so let's take this further. This wonderful D&D meal. We've got Sue Perkins DMing.
Yes.
We've got The Rock as the bread.
Yes.
We've got David Suchet as your red wine. Zendaya is your starter. Mary Berry is your dessert.
Yeah.
I mean, you're the main meal in this scenario now.
Yeah,
Sue is the chef.
That's all right.
What classes do you think everyone's playing?
Yeah, this is rough. I reckon... I find people play D&D one of, like, three ways, really. Mm-hmm. They make themselves.
Yeah.
Or they make the opposite of themselves. Or they make a completely fantastical character. So, like, I'm going to play, because I'm very small, you know, I'm going to play a halfling, and I'm going to play a bard or a wizard, because that's probably who I am. Actually, probably more a wizard than a bard.
I think that was what you said last time when
yeah,
you said that.
I think so.
What if I made myself in D&D, you'd be a wizard.
You know, and then I think The Rock, though, would not play himself.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise we'd just get a Goliath fighter or a Goliath barbarian.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get, like, I don't know, like a... Ooh, what class? I reckon we might get a sorcerer, The Rock.
Yeah.
Making a deal for a lot of power, but it limits you in certain interesting ways. I think that could be a very The Rock thing to do.
Yeah. I was wondering whether he'd be some kind of... I was wondering Warlock because of the characterful stuff that he can do. I don't know. I'm just picturing all of the animated characters he's played. But also, alternative option, a cleric, and he heals you with big hugs.
I love that too. I love that. A hug and cleric.
Who does not want a hug from The Rock?
I don't know.
I think that would warm anyone's heart.
I agree. Yeah, I think, okay, The Rock's our cleric, so we need a heal. We need a healer.
Yeah.
I think Zendaya will play, like, a massive character. Like a Loxodon or someone really large. And somebody... I think Zendaya might be our tank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. I think... David Suchet, I think, will be a... We've got a cleric, we've got a tank. I think David Suchet might be... I'll come back to David. I think Mary Berry might be a monk.
Ooh.
Getting in.
And for why?
Chopping. Why?
Chopping. Lots of chopping.
Also because, like, for a new character, a new player, monks aren't actually that bad of a shout. There are lots of ways of, but do you want to punch things?
Yeah.
It's not the worst choice to go for. And I think a monk is, like, enough zen that I think would be attractive to Mary Berry, but also, like, enough opportunity to influence how the scenario goes.
Yeah.
David Suchet is going to play... Well, this is the problem. Do we think David Suchet has played D&D before?
I would put my money on no, but I would love it to be yes.
Yeah. In which case... I don't know. I'm gonna give David Suchet the Bard.
Okay, nice.
I mean, not because he's an actor, but because I think it gives him the most scope to do fun stuff.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine him being. I'm not very well versed in bards. The Eloquence, College of Eloquence, where he tells these wonderful, entrancing stories.
Yeah.
Rather than playing a music or being big and brash.
Yeah.
It's more like,
I think that would be really
I'm
going to
tell you something enrapturing. And everyone's just like, tell me more, David Suchet.
Yes, tell me more, David Suchet.
What a team.
I really like this team. I like this
Well,
team.
let's make it happen. Let's write letters.
Send tweet.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing. Right, I don't know how we're going to follow that discussion, but I'm going to roll the dice. And
yeah,
see
roll that
up.
Dice.
No, oh, that's our first repeat. That was a 17. We've had that before.
Bang.
Well, okay. After my initial dismal natural one, we've actually been up on the high side of the dice against... That is a 20. That is a natural 20.
Not 20!
So, which character was the hardest to say goodbye to?
I had a character who was a warlock and who was in service to a very scary bureaucratic god. And the campaign just sort of fizzled out. And I was so sad because I really liked playing this insurance broker. Who went on the adventure with everybody else to try and avoid having to pay out premiums.
Nice.
Which I thought was hilarious.
You're just trying to stop the chaos, being like, no, we're here to do this job.
Yeah. No, no injuries. No.
Yeah.
No. And trying to like guide people away from doing what was right and just. So playing a really nasty piece of work, which I don't tend to do. And I'd found a way to do it that did not leave me feeling like I'm doing PvP because I don't enjoy PvP in most games, to be honest. So it was like, oh, I don't want to say goodbye to her yet. She like completely dead in the eye lied to all the party about why she was there and why she kept sneaking off to make calls, and it was really interesting. But I'm it was not to be.
Is that one of the one of those games that has fizzled out and is not going to come back? That's
yeah, it's been quite a few years now.
Yeah, so. Fair enough.
But like, I mean, it let me go off and create a bunch of new amazing ones, so.
Yeah, exactly. There's always, that's the beauty of D&D is that there's always the possibility of something new, trying something. And I said this with Evie, I think if a character is close to your heart, it's never a goodbye. There's always a possibility, like you might find a game where actually, oh, this character would be appropriate and to bring up, and I will find a way for them to make sense that they're here. Or if you're playing with totally new people, they don't know that character, they don't know you've played them before, they don't know their backstory.
Absolutely.
Doesn't have to make sense.
No, not at all.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, you gave us a little spoiler of one of the other questions which we've not asked. So in lieu of rolling a dice, I'm going to say I rolled a number 8.
Excellent.
And let's dig into PvP a little bit more. You say you're not a fan of it.
No, I play games to enjoy spending time with people.
Mm.
And I'm not competitive. So PvP, I don't like inflicting pain or discomfort on people. Mm-hmm. I don't find it funny. And I also, if I'm in a situation, even with like, I don't know, Monopoly or chess.
Categorically the worst game.
Categorically the worst game. But like, nothing about beating someone is exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't try to do it, which then makes it so that the other person doesn't have a great time, because part of PvP is the other player trying to beat you.
Mm-hmm.
And if one person's not playing that yeah. kind of game, yeah,
it's one-sided. It's not fun.
No, like, I think there's enough conflict in just like life.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't want to spend my free time doing that.
Yeah.
And I'm always more interested in constructive and co-creative works.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think maybe the background with the acting and the improv, it's so much cooler. If you're going to do a fight scene, it is so much cooler knowing that you're both trying to create the best fight scene you can.
Yeah.
And you cannot make something amazing and emotive without the trust and the agreement of your partner.
Mm-hmm.
Or partners, if it's a decently large one. And I can't get thrown across the room and land on my back and then blood everywhere if we haven't decided to work together to make that happen.
Yeah.
And so I kind of feel that way about PvP and D&D, because especially in D&D, you have to have an arbitrator of the DM and you have to have the dice. And frequently, characters are not built for the same kind of combat, which is mm-hmm. good in D&D, because it means that your party is varied and interesting and there are lots of different ways to, you know, take down a big worm.
Yeah.
But if it's character versus character and you run out of spell slots, or if it's character versus character and somebody is just better at knowing the game rules.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not for me. I'm not saying it's like categorically should never happen, but I've never enjoyed watching or playing PvP.
Yeah. No, that's totally fair. And are you strictly talking combative PvP here? Because obviously your warlock character was quite deceptive.
Mm.
So, yeah, I've never done combat PvP before, but I have characters that have disagreements with other members of the party where you're having to roll like maybe a deception insight roll-off type stuff. How do you feel about that?
I, Hannah, am not my character. Ever.
Yes. Yeah.
And I also run it by people in session zero. If they're down, then let's try it. But it's the same with like IRL stuff. If you spend enough time with a group of people, you tend to like them and want to help them. And even the insurance broker character chose to go on that adventure, to keep them alive. Yes, the methods weren't ideal.
Mm.
And, you know, doesn't have a ton of morality. I mean, neither does Protea at the minute. But thinking about, like, there's always a base of, there is a reason why you're in this party.
Mm-hmm.
And that reason keeps the party together. So I don't vibe with people who are like, I'm playing a rogue and I'm going to sneak off at every opportunity. I'm like, for fuck's sake, it doesn't extend the story, the core narrative, What it does is extends the playtime for everybody else while you go off and have a one-on-one with your DM.
Like, yeah.
Play something else. So, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I have some friends that are... I say they're not new to D&D anymore, but it's like within the last sort of couple of years. Oh, I've gone blurry. Hello. Yeah. And one of the things that they did, because they are quite analytical, statistical people, one of the things that they do is they're a couple, and they... So they have a campaign that they're playing with set characters, but they've been learning the mechanics of the game by genning characters just to fight each other, just to figure out like what works. And I think that works for them. That's great. Yeah. But that whole concept, I'm a bit like, oh, but I make characters to do silly voices and to be friends with everyone.
And if you have a good DM, it doesn't matter if you've built a broken character.
Yes, exactly. Like,
people who min-max, I totally understand why you do it, but I don't know why you're playing Dungeons and Dragons. I mean, D&D can be anything for anybody, I suppose, but it's a storytelling vehicle to me.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no one way to make the best kind of character. So if you make one character fight another character, it's like you've taken all the humanity or the character work out of these stat blocks. I mean, at that point, like, just put them in a computer and let them fight each other that way. Because even if your character has a really OP spell that would win the encounter straight away, it might not be narratively satisfying to have them use it.
Yeah.
Or your character is afraid, or your character didn't have breakfast, and like letting that feed into your decision making, I think, is really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, that's the beauty of D&D is that it's set up for giving you all of these wonderful character choices and options and storytelling hooks. And then theoretically, if you did want to just play stat blocks, you can.
Yeah.
But we just come back to the importance of a session zero to make sure everyone's on the same page about what game they want to play.
Love a session zero.
Yeah.
Love a session zero.
Amazing. Well, I think we've got time for a couple more questions, so let's see what we can get through. Let's roll that dice!
Roll that dice!
Let's see. No, that was another repeat.
Oh.
Curse your dice. No, oh, I cursed it. No. This is the downfall now. Yeah, that's three in a row repeats.
Wow.
Okay, here we go. This is another fun one. This is another question for Hannah, the real life Hannah.
Oh.
What spell or ability would you have in real life?
Oh, man. I've always wanted to shapeshift.
Mm-hmm.
Always, always, always. So I guess that. I suppose that's closer to an ability than a spell.
Polymorph.
Polymorph. Yeah, I love the concept of shapeshifting. I've always thought it's really cool, and the possibilities are endless, especially because, like, if you already can do silly voices, the downsides of shapeshifting, which is that you're still you inside there, less of a downside is like, or am I? You know?
Amazing.
So yes, I love that. What about you?
Oh, it's really boring, and it's the one everyone goes for, but prestidigitation. I can't even say it. Prestidigitation. Because I just... housework is the bane of my life. And if I could just whoosh, and it's gone and sorted, then, you know, how much more would I get in the day? Either that or... is it tongue? See, this is the thing, I don't know. Having not played as many magic classes... Mm-hmm. I kind of, going through all the classes, playing in different one-shots, I kind of left the magic classes. I've not played a pure wizard yet. And just because I wanted to learn the spell list slowly, because there's a lot of spells now. There's
a lot
now.
And they keep releasing new ones.
So I was like, right, if I'm learning
a new class. I don't want to have to also learn loads of, but I'm at the point now where there's, I do know quite a few spells. So is it tongues or languages or something where you can speak all the different languages?
That is very cool.
Yeah, I'd love that. I find language fascinating, but I wouldn't want it to be like the Star Trek translator or the Hitchhiker's earworm, where you could just understand and you don't recognize that you're speaking a different language. I would want to know. Yeah. I would want to be able to understand the language and understand the etymology and the history. And why do we say that word? Where does that come from? Because that is what I freaking love about language. Especially, I say this as someone who has not learned a great deal of other languages, but I love how English has so many influences. And you're like, oh, we can trace that back to Latin and that back to Scots. And that is, we have some very few scraps of potential Celtic, but we don't really know because the language was eviscerated. And
I'm learning French Norwegian at the minute.
Yeah.
And it is just like, I mean, I'm a Chaucer nerd. Mm. So it's very, actually quite similar still.
Yeah.
All of the base vocabulary is pretty identifiable. Mm-hmm. And the grammar is like, it's Irish German is kind of how I'm thinking about it. It's really, really interesting. And being like, that's exactly the same word as in English, and it's not one of those new words like computer. But yeah, it's really, really fun.
So does that mean that if you've been studying Norwegian, when Niall named the place that you were going troll picking, you knew exactly what it was?
And not a clue, because Niall has a gift for naming things.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sort of gift that your aunt gets you and you see her once a year at Christmas.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, thanks. What? It's really, really funny. He has a list of names for things and for NPCs that he will visibly like just pick one at random from.
Yeah.
And so I don't know whether one's meaningful or not. So at this point, I'm erring on the side of that all just, you know, randomly. So, yeah, no, I did not notice. But like, I've been in a previous campaign of his where we had Norse gods and stuff. And I was like, yes, I am familiar with this. Yeah. I know who this is. So, yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. I had a question that was kicking around in the back of my head to do with your initial choice of spell for polymorph, and it's completely gone from my head.
Oh no!
So on that useful segue, I think we've got time to roll the dice one more time before we wrap this up. So let's
one dice more.
One dice more. Another dice. Another destiny. Ah, interesting. We maybe touched it. This could be quite a long question, so apologies if we run over. Is there a moment in a TTRPG that impacted your life out of game?
I was at the Edinburgh Fringe, and I'm mates with a bunch of poets, being a poet as well, and a friend called Catherine Wilson went, hey, Adventurers Wanted is doing a big like marathon of D&D and they need players. Do you wanna? I went, okay. And I rocked up and I think I played a cleric. It's my go-to base character class. I just love a cleric. And jumping in and playing and immediately vibing with people meant that the D&D character moment where we defeated the big bad, which I think was a mimic. I can't remember now. It was literally like 4 or 5 years ago.
Quite a few years ago now, wasn't it?
And being able to work together to be able to do that and set up somebody else's slam dunk was so cool and fun and straightforward, like walking in and being comfortable with a new skill set was not guaranteed. Mm-hmm. And off the back of that, I got asked whether I'd want to do shows when we got back to London. And it changed my life. I got voice acting work off the back of that. I made a lot of friends off the back of that. I do this. I think about narrative differently, and I think about balancing not just a party of players and characters, but also balancing a group of people in a different way when you invite people around or do a dinner party. Yeah. Or that one, dunking on a mimic, was one of those oh cool, this is something that I can and will and do and make a part of who I am, which is very interesting. So I guess that's the biggest change from a D&D game that has impacted my real life.
Aw, well, we are delighted to have you with us. Yay!
Yay!
Yay, friends!
Friends!
Amazing. Well, I feel like on that note, that is the note to wrap things up with. So, the next episode of Into the Wastelands, The Eternal Army, is actually going to be the last one for a little while. We're taking a little hiatus from
it. Mid-season break.
A mid-season break.
Like prestige television.
Exactly. So I'm not going to ask you what's coming up, because spoilers. Given Protea's new wintry form, what is there something you are looking forward to exploring in the second half when it comes to be?
I think it'll be interesting going from somebody who is very much into self-preservation to somebody who does not feel that need anymore. Mm-hmm. And especially as we approach a very big fight, what that means for playstyle and helping other people out. Mm. I think that it'll be interesting to play opposite people like Verity, Rebecca's character, who have a very different view of what is right and wrong and what one should do in certain situations. And I think it's going to be an interesting shift and change.
Mm. Wow. So, yeah. I look forward to watching it. Do you have, before we go, do you have anything that you would like to plug in the real world?
Yes, please follow me on Twitter. I'm at Challah Out Loud, Challah Out Loud, because I'm Jewish and I like bread. I post about games and I post about writing and I do poetry things. I'm a voice actor, so if you want my voice, you can always send me a message. Hire me. I'm also on The Economist every month, sometimes twice a month. So if you want to hear Varya secretly reading the news of the world, you can always tune in there. Well.
Do you do it in Varya's voice?
No, I don't. Oh. Imagine if I did, though.
Amazing.
That would be,
I feel like,
hilarious.
Can we get a sample headline in Varia's voice?
A sample headline. We don't ever do the headlines, which is so upsetting. We do I did have to do a job advert for The Economist relatively recently, which was very funny because, they give me the most difficult international stuff because I speak Chinese and French and a little bit of German, so they just go, well, Hannah can probably pronounce that, which is great. So from Chaguan, which is the China correspondent Since the Ming Dynasty, Chinese who are oppressed by local officials have sighed, by way of explanation, the heavens are high and the emperor far away. So, like...
Love it.
Yeah. So there we go.
Amazing. Thank you for that.
No worries.
I need to stop doing this. This is a weird habit that's come in. Thank you, everyone, for joining us and being part of the show. If you enjoyed this, we stream Talk Together every Friday from 6 p.m. till 7 p.m. GMT. We're back on GMT now. And we stream D&D games on Mondays and Tuesdays, 6 p.m. till 9 p.m. GMT. In our Monday slot, as we said, we currently have one more episode of Nihilus Sack's campaign, Into the Wastelands, the Eternal Army. And on Tuesdays, we are currently streaming Warriors of Waterdeep, the Dragon of Harvest Shield Mountain. And we're getting closer to the top of the mountain. The dragon is coming again. It went so well last time. All of our shows stream at right here at twitch.tv/rolltogetherrpg. VODs are available immediately after the stream to catch up, or you can find all of our content on YouTube a few days later. And don't forget, you can also enjoy them as a podcast. Hello, podcast listeners. Many thanks again to our D20
Hello
Club.
Podcast.
Hello, podcast listeners. Just for you, a bit of ASMR. Many thanks again to our D20 Club on Patreon. If you'd like to support us, you can do so from as little as one of your local currencies per month. And thank you also to all of our sponsors and supporters arrayed around us. I'm a voice artist. I say words for a living. And always stay classy at the table.